This conference will now be recorded.
Okay, so let's go ahead and call the September 23rd meeting of the Mill Creek City Council to order, and we will begin with the Pledge of Allegiance led by Council Member Mark Bond.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
His flag.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, Naomi.
Yes.
Mayor Pruitt?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw?
Here.
Council Member Bond?
Here.
Councilmember Todd?
Here.
Councilmember Cavallari?
Here.
Councilmember Steckler?
Here.
Councilmember Fennell?
Here.
Okay, first up is audience communication. Does anybody want to talk to the council tonight?
Yes, please.
Okay, name? And name, address, and 3 minutes.
Barb Heibel, 1401 144th Place, Southeast, Mill Creek. I'd like to just make a couple comments about the senior parade. I thought it went quite well. The seniors seemed to be very appreciative and enthusiastic as they drove by. It's great to see people lining the street, cheering them on. And I love to see the students at the very beginning at Jackson High School with playing music and dancing as the procession was leaving the high school. It just seemed very upbeat, and the kids were so enthusiastic when you'd wave to them and say congratulations. It was wonderful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else want to talk to the council? It's not like I can see.
Yeah, I would like to.
Okay, name, address, and 3 minutes.
Yep, John Raymer, 131 Southeast in Mill Creek. All right, now that Memorial Day is behind us, I wanted to share some feedback from the inside and how the events of the day went from my perspective. Overall, I would describe the ceremony and the reverse parade as marginally adequate. It certainly did not measure up to the high standards of production that Mill Creek was becoming well known for in the region and the state. And I feel that's primarily because of excessive interference from management. The directions of what we were supposed to do changed so many times that I lost count. Even within a single phone call, instructions changed from the beginning to the end of the call. Now, the video ceremony was nicely put together despite the limitations imposed upon the CNN crew. However, it was nowhere near what could have been done. Councilman Steckler suggested in one meeting that we produce a video that highlighted spots all over Mill Creek. A script was written to do exactly that. At the 26th May council meeting, Councilman Todd stated he didn't know if we had any video participation from politicians. We did. We had personalized videos from Senator Murray and from Congressman Del Bene. On the 8th of May, Ann Larson from Senator Murray's office emailed me and asked if Mill Creek was doing anything and could the senator be involved. And I worked with both Murray and Del Bene's office for 3 years to get them involved in the community, in our community. They reached out, and Mill Creek turned them away. I don't know why the videos were unused. I also don't know why I was deliberately excluded from the ceremony. Me acting as the master ceremonies was actually in the contract that I had with the city. Yet, despite my asking why I was being excluded numerous times, I was removed from all involvement. The parade itself was a little more problematic. The city manager showed up in person and started directing everyone what to do and how to set up this place. And here's the part that made me very, very angry. I asked the staff to get a podium to place inside of the displays because I knew people would walk by the displays and want to talk. I felt the podium would be an anchor point for them to gather around instead of congregating behind the displays and therefore being inside the pictures that people driving by would take, which is exactly what happened. When Mr. Cherubino found out I had asked for a podium, he called me on my phone and proceeded to yell at me and flat out insult me. He said he would not have the podium there because, quote, "This event is not about photo opportunities for you," unquote. Then he followed that statement up with a comment that this was not some Hollywood production for me to put on, and this was about honoring our fallen. I have never been so insulted in my life. Not once in 3 years of doing parades and ceremonies for the city have I ever made it about me. Even suggesting such a thing is a slap to my integrity. But saying them directly to me while I was preparing to honor my fallen friends is just beyond the pale. And to make it worse, he said them in front of Day, Sergeant Connor, and Chief Eastman. They heard it all. Then he further said it was something about the boots and the battlefield cross were very nice in a very snide and sarcastic tone. The boots on a battlefield cross are supposed to have been removing from the fallen soldier's body. They're not supposed to be polished. They're dirty because he was in combat. And that boots in particular, and that cross, were pilot boots to honor my friend from college, who flew over Baghdad in his F-15 and never came home. So let me say this to the city manager. You are not a veteran. You are not a veteran. Do not ever pretend that you know what veterans want again. You don't know. On Memorial Day, we want to be told by our public officials that our friends' sacrifices are appreciated and remembered. We want pomp and circumstance. We want to see the flag. We want to know America is grateful. We do not want to hear the Lord's Prayer and have a ceremony that ends in 6 minutes. As my contract has been canceled, as exactly as I predicted, I've submitted my final invoice. I sincerely wish the city good luck with Veterans Day. There is a saying, respect is a two-way street. In the military, we say, respect is earned, then given. I've earned the right to respect through 25 years of service and being promoted to a senior officer position with more responsibility than you currently hold now, Mr. Cherubino. You and Interim Chief of Staff Lockhart gave me nothing but disrespect. And to be perfectly honest, you've done nothing to earn mine. Council members, you have a problem with your city manager. I sincerely hope you do not endorse this sort of behavior. You need to fix it. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, John. Does anybody else want to talk to the council tonight?
Yes, I would.
Okay, Ruth, is that you?
Yes, that's me. Thank you. I'm Ruth
okay,
Griffith.
Okay, name, address, and 3 minutes.
Great. I'm Ruth Griffith. My address is 203 160th Street Southeast, Bothell, Washington. I'm here to respectfully request the formation of a racial equity board or some equivalent for the city of Mill Creek to serve in an advisory capacity to the city administration. These are challenging times for all of us. There is much work to do to end racism and racist policies embedded in our institutions and in ourselves. It is time to deal with the harm and pain that racism has caused. As Jacob Frey, the mayor of Minneapolis, said, "We cannot turn a blind eye. It is on us as leaders to see this for what it is and call it what it is." As a middle-aged white woman who grew up in an all-white community, I have come to realize that whites, even those with the biggest hearts and the best intentions, continue to perpetuate systemic racism when we act without listening to the voices of people of color. It's vital to include their perspective in the work of addressing city needs, crafting policy, and making financing decisions if the real change we all want is actually going to take place. Additionally, from an economic standpoint, a recent article from the Wall Street Journal titled "The Business Case for Diversity" showed that companies that are more diverse and inclusive actually do better financially and operationally. The inclusion of multiple perspectives strengthens the company and reduces vulnerable blind spots that can come with a more narrow perspective. If the city of Mill Creek is interested in what other cities have done, the city of Linwood has a Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Commission, which works with that city's mayor and council, and that could serve as a model for Mill Creek to follow. Judging from Mill Creek's recent rallies for racial justice and discussions on the Mill Creek Community Facebook page, I'm confident that many qualified Mill Creek citizens are interested and willing to serve on a board or commission of this type, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Ruth. Anybody else want to talk to the council tonight?
Me.
Going what?
Yep, me.
I'm sorry, who? Carmen?
Yes, it's Carmen.
Hey, Carmen, hi. Name, address, in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Carmen Fisher, 14623 Main Street, D101 in Mill Creek. So first, I wanted to say that I really support the idea that Ms. Griffith brought up. And, you know, I think that it is important that we are proactive in making sure that everyone from all groups feel like invited and comfortable participating in community through government. And, you know, in any way that we can address that, I would love to put my time and energy towards it. So I very much support it and appreciate it being brought up. On the topic of inclusivity, I wanted to say that I really appreciate the Pride proclamation that's on tonight's agenda. You know, I find it meaningful, and I think a lot of people find these kinds of gestures meaningful. So thank you. And
thanks,
finally, I wanted to say that I am really disappointed about the layoff that happened earlier this month. And there are times like this when I know that I don't have all the information in front of me. And I know that you're faced with challenges that won't have popular solutions, and I am sympathetic to that. But, you know, how much of Mill Creek's wealth in the form of experience and loyalty and effectiveness is being wasted when we fire staff members who have decades of experience? And to me, this looks like the latest example in a pattern of not really valuing city employees. And that's led to legal costs and inefficiencies, and more loss of staff through quitting, which comes with its own expenses. And 2 weeks ago, Councilperson Todd was talking about not wanting to take action that damages the city's ability to deliver on things that make Mill Creek the really special place that it is. And I just think that if you have a hostile and uncaring work environment at City Hall, that's creating a serious risk of having hostile and uncaring delivery of city services. And thank you.
Thank you, Carmen. Anybody else want to talk to the council tonight? Going once, twice? Okay, with that, we'll move on to presentations. And we have our Pride Month proclamation. And I would very much like to thank Naomi and Grace for putting this together. It said what I wanted to say, and I just really appreciate their work. So I will go ahead and read it into the record. As soon as I have some light. Whereas our nation was founded upon and is guided by a set of principles that all people are created equal, that every person has the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that each person be accorded the full recognition by and protection of the law. And whereas over the course of our nation's history, the sphere of its moral recognition has expanded to include many persons previously marginalized, disenfranchised, and subjugated. Yet this recognition remains imperfect and this expansion incomplete. And whereas lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer Pride Month is observed annually in the month of June to honor the 1969 Stonewall Uprising, and to, quote, recognize the impact that lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer individuals have had on history locally, nationally, and internationally. And whereas the landmark Supreme Court decision guaranteeing marriage equality in all 50 states in 2015 was a historic victory for LGBTQ Americans, ensuring dignity for same-sex couples and greater equality across state lines. And whereas on June 15, 2020, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that protections provided by Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 are also extended to LGBTQ individuals, thereby making it illegal for workplaces to discriminate against employees on the basis of their sexuality and/or gender identity. And whereas June 2020 marks the 50th anniversary of the annual LGBTQ Pride observances, now therefore I, Pam Pruitt, the mayor of Mill Creek, on behalf of the City Council, do hereby proclaim June 2020 as Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Queer Pride Month. And again, thank you to Naomi and Grace for putting this together. So now we're on to old business, Heron Park acceptance of donation ordinance adoption. Michael, are you going to start or?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. At long last, I believe we have managed to more fully understand the bureaucracy that prevented us from getting this job done a lot sooner. I had the pleasure of speaking with the Rotary Club treasurer today, Mr. Siegel, who's also spoken with staff a couple of times. And I've assured him that my intention was to be clear that if I was going to accept this gift, it was with council's approval. I do understand that there is a provision allowing me under certain circumstances to accept donations, but through certain legal nuances, it authorizes monetary material donations, but the definition of donation doesn't address donations of labor. So what we have is a resolution here that passes muster with Mr. Degginger. Mr. Rogers is going to be on it, and we respectfully request council to support the motion so that we can get started on this aspect of Heron Park, which is already under reconstruction.
Okay, Michael, this would be ordinance number 2020-861.
Yes, Mayor.
Okay, thank you. Any questions or comments from council, or is Tom going to do a presentation? Michael?
Yes, Mayor. Mr. Rogers is prepared to briefly present on this.
Okay.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council. I'm Tom Rogers. I'm the planning manager for the city. As City Manager mentioned, what we have before us is an ordinance 2020-861. I think you covered most of the issues that are there. The one thing that the ordinance does is it also has a agreement in it at the back that the city council would then, or the city manager would sign and Rotary would sign, which sort of has some of the very technical things that has to happen for the work to occur. I guess I'm here mainly just to answer questions. So that concludes my presentation.
Okay, any questions from the council? Looking for hands. Mike Todd.
Thank you, Mayor. And I'm going to set my comments. My comments to City Manager Carabino earlier, and he just responded back at 5:10. So I'm struggling with this. We have made this incredibly difficult, and in his preparatory comments, the City Manager even talked about how difficult the bureaucracy has been. The simple way to do this was to recognize that this is maintenance. It's replacing some boards on an existing bridge. It's not new construction. It is not a new thing, but there has been some confusion about the ownership of this bridge because it was given to the city back a long time ago. It's not been recognized. I appreciate that. But if we went to our own building department, I'm going to ask Tom Rogers here in a minute to speak, but if we went to our own building department and said, do we need a permit to change the boards on that bridge? I don't think we need a permit. This is not new construction. This is maintenance. It is not a big deal. The definition of monetary and non-monetary is clear to me, supported by our policy that says services are part of are included in monetary and non-monetary things. The city manager has $50,000 limit on what he can do. And by making this something that the council has to act on, we have made this, and this is unnecessarily difficult. I fundamentally have pain on behalf of Rotary for this. If I were Rotary, I'd say just forget it, other than I happen to know they already own the materials. We're talking about $500 worth of materials or less and 3 or 4 hours of work. We would have been better off to have our own city staff do this than have to spend the money we've spent with attorneys, council time, staff time, Rotary's time to get this done. This is an example of red tape to the max in terms of government. This is just not well done, not a good idea. I've also given the city manager some comments about the attached agreement. It starts off by saying it's one of two bridges in the park. We would be remiss to say that. It is one bridge in the park. We do not want to complicate the ownership of the parcel that is owned by the homeowners association. That is the detention pond. If we start talking about two bridges, I think that just complicates things and maybe provides a foothold for a future argument or discussion about ownership of that parcel and the maintenance responsibilities thereof. We need to keep it clear. There's one bridge in the city park. This donation is about a small amount of materials, a small amount of labor. Again, this is overly difficult. I'm having a hard time supporting this, particularly when it refers to the attached agreement, which I do not agree with. Thank you.
Okay, Michael, do you have a, I don't know what your exchange was about, so. Michael, you're muted.
Sorry, with regard to the agreement, it's, what I have briefly corresponded with Councilman Todd about is that there are areas in which modifications can be made to it without changing the nature of the agreement that we have and are currently working out with the Rotary Club. So I accept Councilman Todd's constructive criticism, and we're eager to move this along. This is the legal direction that we've been given with regard to an ordinance. Can we do this otherwise? I have questions based on the advice we've been given. We're not looking to complicate this. I want to ensure, though, that if I accept gifts on behalf of the city, I receive the support of City Council, excuse me, to do so. Give me one second. And I apologize for muting. I've got a pretty bad cough here tonight.
That's okay. Any more comments or questions? John Steckler.
I had a question, and Councilmember Todd brought it up. I may be confused, as I normally am. I originally remember the original bridge that we're talking about. I know that bridge. I thought there is a second structure, which is an outlook that the Parkside community is responsible for. But I thought the Rotary Club had also offered to update that as well. Was I mistaken by that? I seem to remember that from a previous council meeting, that they wanted to help us with the bridge and the outlook both.
This Tom, do you know what that is? Tom, go ahead.
Yes, my understanding, I'm in the Rotary and also dealt with some of the original discussions, and I don't recall the outlook ever being discussed as part of their offer at this time. They did not provide that outlook in the beginning. I think this is sort of comes from the bridges deteriorating over time, and the Rotary name was on it, and so they wanted to make it look nice, basically for that reason. But I don't think the outlook is part of it.
Okay, just wanted to confirm that.
Okay, any other comments?
Tom, I went by a question I had for you. So what does this require a permit? And if it requires a permit, does it then trigger other processes with the state and the fish and the all that stuff? That's what I'm worried about. If we do this as a maintenance item, which is how we as a city would have done it, it would not have required a permit, I'm guessing. And this wouldn't be as complicated as it is, but we're requiring people to jump through a lot of hoops. And I'm afraid we're putting more red tape in front of the Rotary. Any comments on that?
Yes, when we first approached us, I talked to our building official that we had in house. He had not left the city yet. And it was determined that it would not require a permit because it is just maintenance. And so that helps us as far as procedurally, we don't have to go through the Department of Fish and Wildlife and get any other kind of permits because it is just maintenance. If it is considered a development, then we would have to submit a HPA, which is a hydraulic permit approval application. And it just takes time and a letter from the city. And it's more procedural. They'd be able to get it. But yes, it does. It is just maintenance. We would not require a permit for it. It'd be like replacing boards. If you have rotted boards on your deck at home, we don't make you get a permit. If the whole structure underneath and it's rotten and you have to replace the whole thing, then you would be required to get a permit.
We spent thousands of dollars on a $500 problem. $500 maintenance.
Stephanie, go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor. I have a quick question on this. that we're not even talking about anymore. That I thought when we started talking about this, there was the discussion that when we started looking at it, that it was never formally given to the city and documented, and that was our problem. Am I remembering wrong? Am I misunderstanding?
Michael?
Thank you, Mayor. Through the chair, Councilwoman Vignale, you are correct. And what we've worked to do is separate this issue here, namely of the acceptance of this gift, from another aspect of this discussion that we are, believe it or not, attempting to simplify here. And I know that we have put in a tremendous amount of time. Mr. Dagginger can give us additional background if it pleases the council, Mayor Pruitt's opinion. But there is another aspect to this that, frankly, we're continuing to struggle with, but we don't want it to get in the way of once and for all addressing this issue so that this decking can be installed.
Okay.
And the ordinance does, in the first section there, it does say that it accepts the original donation of the bridge. So it does cover the one thing, but there is a much longer list of generosity that the Rotary has displayed of other donations that are not addressed in this ordinance.
The chair, Grant, can you add additional insight with regard to Councilwoman Vignale's question, please?
No, I think that Mr. Rogers just answered the question, which was there had been some question about whether the bridge donation had ever been accepted by the city. So we were trying to include that into the ordinance to make it clear that there's an acceptance. We were also obviously trying to address the other information that Mr. Rogers was describing earlier about having the maintenance being performed going forward by the city.
Okay. Anything else? Looking.
The issue still exists, as I posed it to the city manager a number of months ago when this first came up. I want us to fix the root cause. Maybe we can't fix this particular instance by amending 2018-834 and our existing policy 200-09 that talks about donations. But if we erred in doing that when we did that a couple of years ago, let's fix that. This is crazy. If we're going to do a Band-Aid on everything the Rotary or anybody else has ever given to the city, we're going to be talking about this meaningless little stuff that we pay a city manager to handle. This is administrative. This is not council policy. We set a policy that said monetary, non-monetary donations up to $50,000. He can accept on behalf of the city with certain other conditions. This does not need to come to us. Now, if our policy and our ordinance and the way it's embodied in our code aren't right, I want that fixed. I see no effort to fix that. I see this as a patch and a big legal bill. I just can't support this way of doing government. I apologize if I'm being harsh, but the reality is our citizens didn't want to spend $4,000 for a $500 donation. We should have got Nathan and his guys out there one afternoon to replace the two boards that are messed up, or replace them all for $500. But this is crazy, absolutely crazy. You would not manage your money this way at home.
Michael?
Councilman Todd, your point is well taken. We are working on that fundamental fix. It's not on the agenda, but it is what we're working on. It will be presented in a subsequent council session so that we are streamlined and we're able to address this going forward.
Okay. And Michael, did we need an ordinance for this? I mean, is that why we're doing this now?
Yes, Mayor, it is.
Okay. So, any other comments or discussion? Seeing none, we need if we're going to move forward and accept the donation, we need a motion to approve Ordinance 2020-861.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify.
I simply want to comment that I share some of the frustration expressed very well by Councilmember Todd, and I look forward to us cleaning it up and making this, this process a little more efficient. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Abstentions? So it passes 6-1 with Councilmember Steckler. You are abstaining. So we have 5 yeas, 1 abstention from Councilmember Steckler, and 1 nay vote from Councilmember Todd. Thank you. And now we're moving.
Madam Mayor, we need to record the reason for the abstention according to resolution number 1.
John, your reason for the abstention.
I don't want my approval to be misinterpreted that I agree with this process. So by saying I think it might be misinterpreted that I agree with the process, which I don't agree with, but I don't want to oppose it because I do want to move forward and repair the darn bridge. So in this case, I think an abstention is the best policy.
Good deal. Okay, Naomi, you got that? Well, you have the recording. Okay, next up is an ordinance of the City of Mill Creek, Washington to amend the Mill Creek Municipal Code, Section 6.08.10, providing the ability to appeal the declaration of a potentially dangerous animal. Michael?
Mayor, with all due respect, I think we jumped over new business item D, as in David. That's addendum number 1.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I had the things in the wrong place. I apologize. Okay. I had the ordinance 2861 on that. Okay. Addendum number 1 to contract 2018-1461 for building plan review consultant services. Michael?
Jeez. Thank you, Mayor. We have had a contract with Pacific Rim Construction. With a $50,000 limit on it. There were terms of agreement that required the parties to issue notice. When we came within, I believe it was $10,000 of the threshold, the contract well exceeded that threshold. I have spoken at length with former Director Hortolosa regarding this matter. We've also, in the interim period, worked to negotiate a settlement with regard to the excess dollar amount that went beyond the $50,000. And so what I would ask first is for Tom Rogers to present the background. We want to own the omission and the mistake. I believe that their fault lies on both parties with regard to this consultant agreement. Tom, if you get us started here, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, yeah, thank you. Again, Tom Rogers, planning manager. The addendum has 2 substantive provisions in it. It increases the maximum amount of the contract from the $50,000 to $138,822.95. The second provision is that it reduces the contract fixed rate fee from 70% to 60% of the plan review fee that the city charges the developers for the plan review. As far as background, the city usually has a building official in-house. The 2019-20 budget does include that position. We do our plan reviews and inspections with the building official in that capacity. The city also has contracts with consultants that can provide those same services. And usually they're used very sparingly at times when the building official is either out of the office sick potentially or at training or on vacation. So we have several of these contracts, so you have some various options, and we rarely get even close to the $50,000. Talking about the fee, the contract itself is very similar, and it's very common in the industry, is that the contractor gets a It's based on a percentage of the fee that we charge to the developer. The fee is based on the value of the structure. So the fee goes up as the value of the building goes up, and sometimes the fee is very small because it's just a very small valued structure. In the case of this contract, it was 70%. On October 3rd of 2019, the building official resigned, gave us 2 weeks notice, and he became the building official for Snohomish County. We had several plan reviews in the hopper, in the pipeline to be reviewed, and we had nobody to review them. What we did is I contacted Pacific Rim and directed him to perform the plan reviews that had been submitted and were needed to be reviewed. At that time, Pacific Rim had used up $19,800 approximately of the contract of the $50,000. And most of that had been the building official before. We had Rick Carnes as a building official, and then he quit and went to Sultan. And then we had a month or two period where we were in between. So that's when we racked up the $19,000. The permits that are being reviewed by Pacific Rim in October of 19 after the building official left included high value structures for the farm. Building F, just the one building by itself, exceeded $50,000 in a fee, and building E also had very high value. So within 2 months, the overage over the $50,000 amounted to $88,822.95. And that was in the three invoices that are in front of you today. It's important to know that in front of you, the number is actually a little bit higher at one time, because at the 70% ratio, it was higher. And the invoices that are attached right now have been revised to reflect the 60%. Since we realized that had the overage, and I should have realized that, I certainly acknowledge that. We had permits to do, staff wasn't there, we had customers, but within about 2 months, we realized that it had gone over. City policy requires any contract over $50,000 to receive city council approval. And so since we didn't have that approval, we stopped sending work to Pacific Rim. While this was all going on since October and now, the contractor in the city had negotiated a reduction of the fixed rate from 70% to 60%. And again, there the revised invoices are what is in your packet. And those do apply retroactively. Table one shows how the various fee works with the fee that we received from the developer, and then what the percentage is that the consultant that does the review gets, and then the remainder for the city. You will see, let's see. So as far as next steps, or let me go back. So the amount from going from the 70% to the 60% saves the city almost $20,000. As far as next steps, if this addendum, if approved, will zero out the contract, so no more work will be sent to Pacific Rim. Staff has prepared a draft request for qualifications so we can get some other consultant services on contract. Right now, we only have the one consultant, which is Safebuilt. And as a manager, you want to have some other ammunition as far as if something were to happen with Safebuilt or somebody were to get sick, it's nice to have somebody else you can call. And right now, we only have the one contract. And then as the last thing I'd like to say is that when this was all going on, we did a peer review with Safebuilt of Pacific Rim's work and found it to be satisfactory. So the recommendation tonight is to authorize the city manager to execute the contract as presented, not to exceed $138,822.95. This would zero out the balance of the outstanding invoices. It would make the consultant whole, and that's the end. So if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Okay, questions from the council? John Steckler.
Sorry, I was on mute. So as I understand this, we have a contract with this individual to pay them this percentage of the fee that we get, not to exceed $50,000. And yet what's happened now is that fee that we get has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and that 70% or whatever the percentage was, the $50,000 seems like such a small amount that they want to bill a higher amount. But the contract clearly stated that the max was $50,000, correct? So what you're asking us to do is retroactively go back and say that, you know what, we will revise this contract and actually pay you that higher amount of money, even though our contract clearly stated not to exceed $50,000. We'll go back and raise that. I mean, I can clearly understand maybe wanting to do that going forward. Why would we want to do that retroactively?
Well, the consultant had the 70% rate in his contract, and the reason the $50,000 limit was there was because the council hadn't previously approved the contract. It was done administratively. The work has been done. The value has been received by the city, and the city has also collected those fees for the express purpose of doing plan review. And so the 30% administrative cost, if you will, that the city gets to keep, you know, it's not a tax or anything else. It's a fee for plan review. And so that seemed, you know, what happened was is that it all happened within 1 month. The city had customers, we had expensive, important projects. Staff left unexpectedly with 2 weeks' notice, and permits needed to have to be done. We've had these contracts with various consultants for years and years and never came close to it. Basically, staff switched the permits over to contractors and got the work done. And in a lot of ways, I was glad that we were able to do it without interrupting the service. If it were to go through, you know, in hindsight, I just didn't ever have one of these contracts ever. I wasn't expecting an invoice that high, to be honest. I mean, I just didn't realize the value of the buildings and what it would result. But certainly the contractor has done the work. For one of those buildings, I think building F is 670 full sheet pages of plans. It takes weeks and weeks to go through them. The idea of not paying him to me doesn't seem fair.
Did the vendor ever approach us and say, hey guys, this $50,000 isn't enough, I think we need to revise the contract? Or did they just start asking for more money than the contract allowed?
I think we both realized the issue when the invoice got to the city and we realized it. I think, you know, we keep talking about the contract, but the contractor is actually, his name is Tim Nordbeck. He worked for the city as our building official for 16 years and then has been a contractor for us for 4 years. So there's a familiarity or a relationship as far as working together that it's not a typical, I don't know, I just didn't realize it. It all happened within a month. It's not like we went on and they kept billing and billing and the city kept paying and paying.
John, I think this is really a procedural issue. I mean, it's not going back and changing the price. This was a time and materials contract, and I believe at the time the staff executed the contract, they didn't think there was going to be more enough work to get anywhere close to the cap. And then the farm came in and some other applications came in that necessitated project review. I think they just lost track of how much work this inspector was doing. And when they added up what he was owed under the contract, it exceeded the cap of 50 that would have necessitated it coming to us. So that, I mean, that's really all this is about. The guy did the work. He did it according to the fee schedule. That was part of the contract. This was just a situation where when they got to the point where it was apparent that they were going to exceed $50,000, they should have come to us to amend the contract.
Exactly.
So it's not changing the price or anything. And Mr. Nordvid did all the work and all the plan review, and apparently they had it peer reviewed and he did it satisfactorily. So there's no issue with the quality of the work.
They're changing the parameters of the contract is what they're doing. The max cap is $50,000.
It's not the parameters of the contract. It's just the whether or not it needed to come to us for approval.
Okay, Mike Todd, and then Stephanie.
Thank you. So if this had been a construction contract, for instance, we would have had we would have let a contract to somebody to build a park or build a bridge or build a road for $500,000. And in the process of doing that work, they found issues, the contractor and the builders found some issues, and they had to issue change orders to that original contract. If those change orders were more than $50,000, they would have come to us and said, it's gonna be more than 50,000 bucks. That's more than the city manager can sign off on. Council, you need to make an addendum to the contract that says, we all agree, you did the work, the bridge is more complicated, the park is more complicated. It was 575, council, you need to approve a change over $75,000. I think this is the same kind of thing. Now, that probably should have come to council back when this was discovered, right around the turn of 19 to 20. The fact we're talking about it now is embarrassing. And it's not fair to either party to have drug this out. But the facts are still that they did the work. It was work that we needed done. Shame on all of us for not noticing that $50,000 was kind of our agreement for this backup capability. When we lost our building official, we needed to hire a new one, or we need to pay the freight for dealing with consultants. This is expensive, but that's the way it goes.
Okay, Stephanie? And then Michael.
Sorry, I keep forgetting to unmute. I want to say, you know, I agree. They've done the work, and I'm concerned that we didn't see this. Shame on us for not seeing this. And I'm concerned. I would like to make sure that we do have some fail safes in place to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future. And this is something that I try to look at when I'm looking at the bills to see if we're going over contracts or spending more than we were budgeting, and that gets a little complicated. We need a better way of keeping up with those things. But I don't think at this point, you know, they've done the work. It's been found satisfactory. We need to pay them for that, because that looks bad on the city if we have people do work and we don't pay them for that. And we need to fix this going forward so that we don't have this problem again. Second, I had a question, because the way Tom was talking that we were going to finish this contract with them and then we're looking for someone to fill it. Why aren't we finishing this contract and then they're still open to do future contracts? Am I missing something?
Yeah, Michael?
Yeah, a couple of aspects here. Yes, Councilwoman Vigneault, there's another aspect to this. And I want to go back to Councilman Todd's statement that we should have addressed this last year. When I first learned how far we had exceeded this contract, when I had learned that this individual was a former employee of the city and did further digging as a fiduciary of the city of Mill Creek, I was deeply concerned about what I saw as potential entanglements of relationships that might have explained the oversight. And so I wasn't ready to come to council to explain with nothing that satisfied me that we had exceeded this dollar amount on this contract as much as we did. I am concerned anytime a former employee is working as a contractor in any municipal government. And so what we did in working with Director Hortolosa was conducted a peer review relating to the quality of the work that was done for the inspection services on the farm. That did take time. There are other aspects of this a relationship with Pacific Rim that were investigated internally in our finance department. And I was also wearing the hat of the acting finance director. And what I learned is that there's a history of this entity collecting both a 1099 through the Pacific Rim entity, and at a time was working similarly in that period as an employee of the city. These were strong flags that called up for me a duty to investigate before I came to the council and just simply acted as if this was a matter of fact oversight and an addendum that we are requesting to the contract. I share your concern about the lack of internal controls. I've had extensive conversations with our new finance director and chief of staff regarding safeguards that we need to put in place that not only enable us to ensure that there's a redundancy when it comes to the oversight of contract management, but that there is a system by which we independently investigate whether there are pre-existing relationships so that we're more transparent when we share this information with council at the time we request authority. While I do not have anything gladly to report that appears yet to be problematic, I wanted the council to understand what we were doing behind the scenes and what I was expecting to learn once I was put on notice of this excessive amount beyond the $50,000 contract authority. I apologize that it took this long, but I do not apologize for the diligence that went into this during this time period.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else? Seeing none, so we're looking for a motion.
Mike.
I'm sorry, who? John?
So,
oh, Mike, Todd, you just.
Yeah. Under next, Tom Rogers, help me out with this probably, or maybe somebody else. So under the next steps, I see that now we have Safe Built under a contract that is probably carrying on and doing our other plan review and building inspections for us under a similar kind of contract. So if I bring in my deck permit, bad example, I bring in my bathroom addition issue or the farm needs more things, this is being done by Safe Built now, but your comment earlier, Mr. Rogers, was that we shouldn't just have one, we should have somebody else, and that's why you're looking for RFQ to find others. Are there others out there?
Yes, there are. We had BHC, which we don't have anymore. There are other firms that would likely bid on an RFQ or give us their qualifications that we can negotiate with. And we would try to, one of the things I learned in this process by looking at other cities, and I have copies of many of the other contracts, would be I'd be better at negotiating a contract just knowing more. But yes, right now we have one contractor, it's Safe Built. We have an RFQ that has been drafted and should be advertised so that we could have more than one option. I mean, if something happens to our inspector or the company decides to do something different, or we have a internal conflict with the company, we don't really have an alternative at this point.
So that contract is, we've not seen it, I don't think, so it's probably under $50,000. And do we still have capacity in that contract to keep the farm and other projects on track?
Yeah, we're less than halfway through it. It's gone pretty quick. You'll see an invoice coming up in your next meeting to them. I think we're about halfway there. If we will need to bring that contract to the council at some point if we don't have another contractor on board. And I think that in the future, that because of that, how it can vary so much and $50,000 can go so quickly, I would suggest bringing it to the council without the cap on it and just deal with it on the invoice basis and let the council be aware of it. Because a lot of times we do that $50,000 administratively just to make it simpler for administration. But in the long term, that wasn't the best idea.
Yeah, I concur and I support that. I think since we don't have a building official, we don't have a plan capability within house, we need to prepare, because I do not want to see us being the critical path on development projects in the city. Thanks.
Okay, Michael?
Thank you. With regard to the contractor BHC, Director Hortolosa had requested documents that were presented to her only in redacted form. We continue to make that request, and I'm concerned that until we are able to do our diligence with regard to the redactions that have never been satisfactorily explained, I had directed Director Hortolosa to discontinue work until we were able to get satisfactory answers. I also directed Gina Hortolosa to refer to the MRSC website, Councilman, which I understand has a plethora of firms that can do this type of work. So when the RFQ is finalized, in addition to our traditional channels, we are going to ensure that we have reputable firms, hopefully that apply and that will meet our standards so that we're not beholden to any one vendor here. Your point is well taken, and we're going to work accordingly. We're also going to press the request that's been long outstanding with relationship to documentation from BHC that we've yet to receive in the unredacted form.
I'm confused. What BHC is a new term here. What's BHC? It's not Pacific Rim. It's not Safe Built. What's BHC?
It's an entity that Tom Rogers referred to earlier, and I understand is an independent or subcontractor of Safe Built. Is that correct, Tom?
No, BHC is very much like Safe Built or Pacific Rim. They are their own contractor, and so they were a firm that we terminated their contract. We had requested some information from them, and they said it was proprietary and did not want to submit it.
So that was one of our three vendors. Pacific Rim has tapped out. BHC, we don't want to do with them, so now we're down to Safe Built. Thank you.
John, you have your hand up again?
Jeff.
Jeff.
Sorry, I believe, Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think part of the BHC question is the second tier relationship they may have had with Pacific Rim. Is that correct?
I believe so. Tim also works for BHC, and when we could no longer use them and BHC could no longer satisfy, they didn't have the capacity to do the work, BHC asked Tim to do them through BHC as a subcontractor, and he got 50% and 20% was retained by BHC. But they didn't provide that information in writing. I know it just because I know it.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. So,
Michael, go ahead.
Just one final question. We say Tim, what is Tim's relationship to BHC, Tom?
It's a pretty small group of, I mean, everybody knows it, but everybody in the whole, in the field. And so when BHC gets overwhelmed with demand, Tim is a subcontractor for them. He's like one of their plan checkers. And so when BHC, when Willie Hill with BHC got the plans, he farmed them out to Tim, and Tim reviewed them, put them back through Willie, back to the city. He performed the service. And those plans were also reviewed by Safe Built and peer reviewed and found to be satisfactory.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And they both charged the city 70%, so the contract was the same. It didn't cost the city anymore.
Okay, Stephanie, is that your hand up?
No, actually it wasn't, but since you called on me, I guess I was slightly confused because was he getting paid twice to do the work? Or no, we paid the one company that paid him for the one work and we paid him for different work. Is that?
Yeah, that's the second option there, yes.
Okay.
We only paid once.
Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? Going once, twice, Stephanie? Okay. So what we need is a motion to authorize the city manager to execute addendum number 1 to contract 2018-1461 for building plan review consultant services with Pacific Rim to number 1, increase the maximum amount of the contract to not exceed $138,822.95. And 2, to reduce the contract fixed rate fee from 70% to 60% for city plan review processes. So do we have a motion? Oh, Brian?
I moved.
Mike seconded it? Okay, Mike moved it.
And we need to eliminate the 50,000 cap?
That's what the amendment does.
Motion to amend.
The motion is to approve the contract addendum, which in the terms of the addendum changes the cap of the contract.
Okay.
Okay, let me express this a different way. We reduce the contract fixed rate fee from 70 to 60%, but we don't address what happens to the maximum.
Yes, we do. Section 3.1 changes the total cap. Total compensation due under the agreement shall in no event exceed $138,822.95. It amends the section that had the $50,000.
For this particular contract only. Correct. Not going forward.
This ends the contract. We pay them what's owed on the outstanding invoices by increasing the cap of the contract up to what is owed, and then the contract is done.
Mayor, I do have a comment on this before we take the vote.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to, first of all, thank everyone for their comments about the spirit of the contract, that they had completed the work, and that a number of people feel that they're deserving of this fee because they did the work that was asked of them. I personally cannot support this, because whenever you set contract parameters, you set them for a reason. You set them to protect yourself from exactly what we are agreeing to today, an agreement to increase the fees that the city will pay retroactively, when the reason you set contract parameters is to motivate your vendors to come to you and say, this isn't working, we need to change the contract parameters. Instead, this vendor didn't do that, and now we're stuck paying a substantially higher amount, and I can't support that.
Mayor?
Yeah, Brian.
That is not what happened. This is not on the vendor. This is on us. We exceeded the contract amount, and the city kept sending him plans to review, and he kept doing the work that was being sent to him, and neither the vendor nor the city kept track of the fact that, oh, yeah, we had a cap. The only thing that didn't happen here is if we'd anticipated how much work there would have been, there was going to be in August when this contract was signed, instead of setting the cap at 50,000 and not bringing it to us, they would have set a higher cap and brought it to us for our approval at that time, and all the work that we're talking about would have been done. This is simply a procedural issue.
Again, they have just as much onus to come to us and say, you're giving me more work, I can't do it with the parameters you gave me. They did not come back to us. They just kept doing the work under the contract parameters that were in place. They had just as much responsibility to stop down and say, no, I'm not proceeding until we renegotiate this. So to come back and say, I will agree to whatever fee you're asking for because you had to do more work than was in the contract, I don't support that blanket agreement. I don't.
It's not whatever fee was agreed to. He billed us per the terms of the contract by the time and materials set out in the scope of work of the contract.
We agree to disagree.
Not understanding what the issue is here.
Like I say, we agree to disagree on that. It's not per the terms of the agreement. Respectfully.
Okay, Mark Bond, did you have your hand up?
It's fine.
Yeah.
Let's just move forward.
Okay. Mike Todd?
Well, I'm just going to clarify. I know we're going to agree to disagree, but it should be noted that, well, as the terms of the contract were, we would pay 70% of the value of the structure whose plans were being approved. The contractor and the city have negotiated that to be 60%. And so the amount that we're moving the cap to here is a savings of, like Mr. Rogers said, on the order of $20,000. So there was some admission by the consultant that he owns some of this for not going, whoops, this is too much work. We own a lot of that. Together, we're in a better position than we would have been had the city originally had a contract that came to council and said, we don't have a building inspector. Let's have a contract with Pacific Rim or Safe Built or BHC without a cap on it. That's what should have happened in retrospect. We didn't know we were going to lose our building inspector. We need to pay these guys. They did the work. We're getting a discount. This is a good way to solve a process problem on our part and be good partners in a relationship. Thanks.
And I'd just like to add that I agree with Mike and Brian. This shouldn't have happened, and Michael is in the process of implementing controls so it doesn't happen again. But we're basically paying for what we should have done anyway, what we were going to do anyway. So I'm not happy. But we owe the money, and we were at fault also for not paying attention. So let's just pay the money and move on. And thanks, Mike, for calling out that we're in a better position with the 60 versus 70%. So at least that's something for us. So any further discussion? We have a motion and a second. Mark Bond, did you have your hand up?
Just unmuting so I can vote.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Opposed.
Abstentions? So it passes 6-1 with Councilmember Steckler. Councilmember Steckler abstaining.
Opposed.
Opposed. I'm sorry. Sheesh. Too many papers. This is so much easier in council chambers. Okay, now we're up to item, this is E, an ordinance of the City of Mill Creek to amend the Mill Creek Municipal Code to include the ability to appeal the declaration of a potentially dangerous animal. Even I know about this one. Michael?
Thank you, Mayor. It turns out, again, we're being technical, but it showed itself to be very important in this instance. We have an ordinance. I'm not sure how long ago it was written, but basically is defective to the extent it doesn't provide for an appeal process. It's a fundamental due process question. And so what we are doing is coming to council to ask for their support in amending the ordinance to provide for that appeal. The further background on this, which Acting Chief Eastman will speak to in a moment, is that we recently had a dog bite incident. And the party with the dog that bit another individual received a citation, a write-up as it related to the dangerous dog. And we then began correspondence with their legal representative who pointed out the defective nature of our ordinance. And so we're coming to council almost immediately after we've learned of this so that we can fix this immediately. It should not have happened. This ordinance, whenever it was written, should have already had applied or provided for the right to appeal. And so that's essentially what we're asking for. I would, with the council's permission, ask Acting Chief Eastman to provide additional background.
Hey, Michael, can I just ask one quick question?
Yes, please.
So why would the city need an appeal process? Don't we contract through South District Court? I mean, by the time it ever gets to an appellate matter, why would we be hearing it or reviewing it?
If I might defer to Mr. Deginger for that response, Mayor.
Okay.
Yeah, good evening. Thank you, Councilmember. The way we have our ordinance set up, there are several different levels of addressing animal ordinances. This is the first step, is the potentially dangerous dog declaration, which is what is at issue, and it's in ordinance 6.08.010D. And that is if there's investigation. I'm getting into the chief's presentation probably, but therein is the place where it happens, is that there is no appeal mechanism for the designation for the imposition of a declaration of a potentially dangerous dog. And that typically occurs after a complaint has been received or the city receives information about a dog bite or its officer witnesses a dog bite. There are ways then for the officer to prepare the declaration, serve it upon the owners of the animal. And since this is the first incident with that animal, it's deemed a potentially dangerous dog. If there is further, if there are other incidents that occur subsequently, it could be deemed a dangerous dog. And one of the factors in having the animal deemed a dangerous dog is whether there has been previously a potentially dangerous dog declaration issued. And so the question becomes whether there should be a right to appeal the potentially dangerous dog declaration. And there is some case law in the state of Washington strongly suggesting that that is a property interest because it could be used later to impose, fines or even jail time if the animal is later deemed to be a dangerous dog. So for that reason, it's been recognized that there needs to be an appellate route. We have an appellate route, a right to appeal a dangerous dog determination. So what we're doing now is adding it to the potentially dangerous dog declaration.
Thank you.
Okay. Chief Eastman?
Uh,
Mayor, thank you. I think that the city manager and the city attorney covered most of the information. I'll just point out that Municipal Code 6.20 is the section that covers non-judicial appeals and hearings. And city attorney correctly pointed out that we do already have an appeal process for a dangerous dog determination, but we also actually have you can appeal denial of a dog license. So there are other sections in Title VI that provide for a non-judicial appeal. So that would be a hearings officer appointed by the city manager. We refer, or think of the potentially dangerous animal declaration as basically a final warning. And that as the city attorney pointed out, the ordinance lists behaviors that if this potentially dangerous animal commits, the owner could be cited for a misdemeanor. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Vincent?
And I think that's kind of the rub right there. That's kind of where I was going. Most people, when they hear what we're doing here, they think that we're setting up an appeals process for an infraction, but when in fact we're not. If they're infracted, they do have to go through the court system and the court appeal process. This is just, an emergency. I don't know how you phrased it, but the dog declaration, so a more dangerous dog declaration, to appeal the city just declaring that, not the criminal offense?
Correct. That's correct.
Okay.
And okay. Mike Todd. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike. You're muted.
I had to find the mute button. Had to find the mouse on the mute button. So Mark probably remembers, we talked about this for a long time, and it was very complicated and convoluted when we first talked about the potentially dangerous and the dangerous dog. It sounds like we just missed a piece because we had an appeal process for you can't get a license and you got a dangerous dog. Those both had appeal processes, but we just missed the middle ground, the kind of final warning. So Councilmember Cavallari just referred to the court process. Our appeal process is through our hearing examiner, am I remembering correctly?
That's correct, Councilmember.
So it's an easier process than going to court to say, officer, our support officer said this is a dangerous dog, and they get a chance to go to the hearing examiner and say, here's why that's not a good idea, and get that taken back so they're not in that one strike on the way towards two strikes and you're out issue. Thanks.
This that's correct.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, then we need a motion. Is this an ordinance? So it'd be 2020, am I in the right one? 2020-862, an ordinance of the City of Mill Creek, Washington to amend the Mill Creek Municipal Code Section 6.08.10, providing the ability to appeal the declaration of potentially dangerous animal. And that'll be ordinance 2020-862. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion from Vince and a second from John Steckler. Is that okay? A second from Steckler. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, passes unanimously. Next up is another COVID-19 revenue projection, and I didn't have a good handle on the numbers last time, so hopefully this simplifies it. I don't believe there's any new information here because we don't have new information, but we are expecting, Jeff, we're expecting an update on sales tax at the end, on or around June 25th, and we will be getting an update on property tax on July 11th. That's when the check comes. Because as you read in the thing, we're 500,000 light there right now. But that may be due to three council members who paid their taxes on June 1st who will go unnamed as we all stare at each other. So, Jeff or Michael, do you want to take it away? One of you?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. It's really our sincere effort to provide the most current information. And in receiving the feedback, we wanted to present you with what we believe will help simplify and explain our feelings and our concerns as it relates to the numbers. So we've put in a lot of time to develop this, and I want to commend Mr. Ballantyne for his efforts to receive the feedback and for us to come back at it again a second time here tonight. Or an additional time, I should say.
And the intent is that this will be updated every time we get new information. So as it comes in, the council will see it.
That's
correct. Jeff?
Thank you, Mary. Thank you, council. Thank you, city manager. And I appreciate your time on this. So this is the latest update, and I thought it might be wise to talk a little bit about projections in general. The certainty I have in my projection is that I'm wrong. I'm either going to be too aggressive or too conservative. So we're using the best information that we can. And we are also taking a look at what other entities are doing in regards to their projections, and very specifically in their sales tax as it affects them. And looking at how that may or may not relate with us, because obviously our mix in our city is different than others. So what I'd like to talk about in this brief presentation is kind of go back over what we talked about last time we met, which was where we are and stay very focused on general fund revenue as compared to this biennial budget. I talked a little bit about 2019, and that really was to talk about the trends going forward from 2019. And so in this conversation, I'll stretch that through this year, 2020 through 2022. And then you're going to have a chance to kind of see at a high level projection model comparisons from varying sizes of entities, and to include Snohomish County Community Transit, the state of Washington. We'll talk about next steps and have an opportunity for your questions. Now, I can't see you, so if you're raising your hand, please don't hesitate to interrupt this presentation. Again, this is really kind of talking about where we're at right now, which is very early on in collecting the actual data and being able to use that to compare against how our projection model is built. So the one thing that I want to identify, and this is in your package that we sent you, is the State of Washington update. And they recently just did that, I believe it's June 17th. And what they say very clearly is in February, the United States entered a recession in Q1 of 2020. And what these also say multiple times throughout their presentation is that the level of uncertainty in the forecast is significant. You know, and you're going to see this coming up, but I saw a 20-point variance in their forecast from an optimistic to a pessimistic, which is all over the map, as you know. And then the mayor pointed this out, and this is something that we have to be diligent on, and that's continuously reevaluate as we get more data and we check more data and apply the best modeling, just like they're doing with the COVID-19. We need to do the same with our budget, and especially as we move in July into the next biennial budget. And you'll see in the highlight overall when I'm trying to get across is really not so much about where we're at for this year and how well we did last year, but ultimately this is going to be a long-term recovery. And what we're projecting right now, if you had basically a what if COVID-19 didn't happen and you have the current expenses that we're running today and been trending for years on, it would indicate this revenue decrease from the COVID-19 through 2020 could be as much as $4.2 million. And again, it's very dependent on our projection modeling. So highlights from the State of Washington Economic and Revenue Forecast Council, they provided their economic review on June 17th, as I talked about, and that's attachment A. But here's a couple quotes that I thought were very important for this discussion. The first quote is, the impact of lost economic activity from the COVID crisis will extend for many years. The June General Fund State, GFS, revenue forecast has been reduced by $4.5 billion in the current biennium and $4.4 billion in the next. Over half of the decrease, and this is significant, is declining sales taxes, as we know. the forecast of the GFS revenue for the 2023-2025 biennium has decreased by $4.5 billion, unquote. And that's the State of Washington Economic and Revenue Forecast Council. The State of Washington Economic and Revenue Forecast Council also said, quote, taxable REIT has fallen to levels last seen in 2014, unquote. Even after we built this presentation, more and more data is coming out. And it, in 2014 is significant because right now kind of where we're seeing the economy is very similar to that year. So trying to take what we've been talking about over the last three or four sessions and summarize it in one graphic, I tried to do that here. So this gets back to the ultimate highlight, which is where we're projecting 2020 through 2022, having potentially a $4.2 million revenue loss impact. And this is important and kind of ties back to what we've been talking about. Although 2019 was great and we saw a great trend, as you can see with the actuals on the left, 2017 to 2019, our expense lines, the way that we have our resources structured today, or I should say prior to pre-COVID-19, would suggest that blue line, that our expenses run roughly equal to that blue arrow that you see shooting off to the right. So the difference between the blue bars is what we're currently projecting our revenue, and that blue arrow in the forecast lines of 2020, 2021, 2022 represent roughly $4.2 million. So that is right now the shortfall that we're trying to address. So with that being said, how good is the city's projection model? And again, I don't know. The crystal ball is very foggy. So we decided to reach out to a number of different groups, and we got some information from another. So I'm going to review briefly Snohomish County, Community Transit, and Washington State. And just so you know, I will continue to reach out to other entities that are similar in nature and work with them to see how they're approaching it and advise the council how that might impact. And then again, as we start to receive information at the end of this week and on July 11th, then we'll have more data that we can really make, you know, a stronger projection. But let's look at Snohomish County. Speaking with the finance director there, they're looking at a 10% decrease in total revenues versus prior year. So as us, they're also they look at prior year actuals because that's the basis of their trend history and really where their expense lines are coming. They also have indicated that they're projecting, and they do it on really for the rest of the year at a 16%. So it's not granular by month. At least they didn't share that with me. It was more for the entire 2020, suggesting that there's going to be a 16% decrease for the full year in sales and use tax. Now, if you apply those assumptions in our model, that would say that, heck, our revenue projection would improve by $736,000. So if you remember what I was talking about last time with the budget, the variance of budget for the biennium, it was like something about $680,000 off, $730,000 on the revenue side. I was talking about fund balance before, but about $730,000, we'd be relatively flat versus budget. So this would be a great thing if Snohomish County is correct. But then we'd look at community transit. And this I find very important because community transit is very much driven by their sales tax. 80% of their operating revenue comes from sales tax. And they have two scenarios in their projection model. They have a number one, the fast recovery, number two, the quick recovery. And they are suggesting in that one, kind of what we're seeing right now, multiple recurrences in the virus. And then if you apply and by the way, they're looking at it month by month by month. So it's not a year. So it's a little more granular here. So when I apply their revenue assumptions to our model on number one, which is a fast recovery, no reoccurrences of the virus, it would improve our revenue projection by $461,000. Now, that would still mean that versus budget for the biennium, we would have about $269,000 deficit. Now, if you apply their quick recovery, number two, with multiple reoccurrences to our model, it would actually increase our deficit. So it's more conservative than what we have versus prior year by about $110,000. Now, when you apply that versus the biennial budget, that would mean we'd have a deficit of about 840,000. Now, finally, and this one I find really important, Washington State, as you know, has much, much broader and robust resources to look at the specifics of what the impact is going to be in their projections. But with that being said, I will tell you that if you looked at their February projection, long-term revenue projection, versus the June one, there's a 9% decrease. And by the way, in February, they were calling out COVID-19. So again, what that is really tells me and I want to communicate to you is that they have great resources and they were very much off of their projection, and in this case, to the negative. 18% of the total state's revenue, by the way, is sales tax. Now, I was able to kind of extrapolate their long-term year by year, but they stretch it out long-term. And I applied that to ours. And as you know, right now I'm projecting out 10 years, but I'm really, look, you can't really do that. So I'm focusing going through 2022. So using the state assumptions in here, and understanding that that model, by the way, has a 20.4 variance, as we talked about, between their optimistic and pessimistic scenarios, it really says that our long-term projections, that $4.2 million shortfall I was talking about before in the general fund revenue, is pretty much spot on now with the 20-point variance. But it indicates that. So I guess what's really important here is to know that there are some models out there that are saying, hey, look, we may be just fine, maybe all right. And then there's other models that say, no, you're probably just right. And another model says you could be off a little bit. So what's important in these next steps? And as the mayor pointed out before, we have to consistently and constantly update the city model based on the actuals. We have to look at it in the phased approach. Our model is very granular, by the way. I'm literally looking at phase by phase. I'm adjusting the months as the new reopening schedule moves forward. We will have the sales and use tax actuals on June 26. That will be very key because that will represent April. Now, what that's not going to represent, again, will be phase two and then phase three when we get there. So we're still taking some guesses, but this will help us absolutely see that impact that we had for a few months of phase one. Also, as the mayor pointed out, property tax. We should receive July 10th or July 11th from the treasurer what our property tax is. And this is for June, and this is important because we right now are $500,000 below projections. Now, that didn't surprise us, and we did not pull down our projections based on property tax. But this is this could be risky, and that's why you're seeing it here. Once we see what the actual property tax is, we'll be able to see for those that were allowed to have a deferred payment. So essentially, those who pay their own property taxes were able to delay their payment, they could postmark it and send it in on June 1st of 2020. And then banks and other financial institutions that typically pay for their lending customers, they didn't have a change. They had to meet their original April 30th. The question is, were they able to, right? So we're going to find out the answers to that here very soon, again, July 10th or July 11th. And then next steps as well, we are really leaning forward on passport operations. It's a huge revenue generator for the city. And the idea on how we do this safely in the new safety format, we do know that even when we go into phase three, the capacity will be still very limited. We're only going to be able to have two stations opened. So it'll be interesting to see, especially in light that most people aren't even traveling. But based on capacity and need, what's going to happen there. So in conclusion, I really want to say, you know, overall, look, we were heading into a bad place even prior to COVID. The indicators are there that we were heading into a recession. It was validated that we actually hit a recession. COVID-19 definitely helped us there in Q1 of 2020, in February. Most importantly, we're uncertain of the forecast, but we're going to do our very best to continue to watch it, reproject it, and get it in front of you. And then again, at least at this point in time, 2020 through 2022, we're projecting that the shortfall roughly versus what the trend line has been on the expense side is roughly $4.2 million. So I'd like it, And I'm going to keep my screen open so you can see it and ask for any questions. And then, Mayor, if you tell me just to shut down my screen, then I'll be able to see you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Any questions or comments from the council? Okay. Well, we're going to have more updates. We'll have pretty much, as long as something's coming in, we'll have updates at every single meeting. So we're going to stay on top of it. Michael?
Thank you, Mayor. What we want to acknowledge is that I know that we were talking about a schedule with council where we would have one session that's solely for presentations. However, given the extraordinary times we find ourselves in, we are strongly planning to engage in this information study session format as frequently as necessary, because we continue to get data in. We want to make certain that we're sharing the information with you as quickly as we get it. There's a lot of important decisions that are being made based upon this information, and we're noting a lot of fluctuations in the information as the weeks go by. So what we're sharing with you is the most up-to-date data rolling forward. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. So seeing no hands, we'll move on to the consent agenda. So we have three items: approval of checks number 62078 through 62133 and ACH wire transfers in the amount of $1,092,303.41. Audit committee, council members Cavallari and Holtzclaw. Any exceptions?
No exceptions.
No exceptions.
Thank you. Payroll and benefit ACH payments in the amount of $281,709.22. Any exceptions?
No exceptions.
No exceptions.
Okay. And City Council meeting minutes of June 2nd, 2020 and June 9th, 2020.
So yeah, those were pulled.
Yeah, Mayor.
They're on my thing.
They were pulled from the consent agenda. Should just be
okay. Oh, nobody told me. Okay, so we have items G and H on the consent agenda. Do we have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Passes unanimously. Now we're down to reports. I had a conference call today with the county and the health district and what have you. Many of you may have heard already that starting Friday, Governor Inslee has mandated wearing masks in public statewide. We heard about it for the first time this afternoon, and I was surprised it happened at 3 o'clock, but apparently this was fast tracked. Just so everyone knows that the PPE warehouse, which was at Cathcart, is now moving to the Evergreen State Fairgrounds, which will have a larger facility. And they're also moving the Angel of the Winds facility out to the Evergreen State Fairgrounds. It'll be a smaller operation in the beginning, but it can be expanded if necessary. And they're continuing to do bulk orders of the PPE. In fact, the county's already spent $5 million on PPE. And they're continuing, there's tiers of who can receive the different types of PPE. And the county continues to provide to tiers one and two. That's health people, first responders, that type. Let's see. The governor has said that two or three counties need additional assistance. That, of course, is like Yakima and Benton County and maybe Franklin. Let's see what else. And he's paying attention to both the east side and the west side of the state and what's going on in Yakima and other states around the country. So they're already working on the phase three application, but as you'll hear in a couple minutes, the numbers aren't good. So technically they could do the numbers on the 26th, but it's going to start with Dr. Spitters at the health district. He'll look at the data and see if it can move forward. And then the health district, and there'll be lots of conversation with the county executive and the county council. So they were hoping to submit an application at the end of this week or perhaps early next week, but we'll see where the numbers are at. According to the health district, there's been a slight uptick in cases. And that this data is from 531 to 613. Our target allowance is 25 new cases, and we're actually at 22, which is up from 19 at the last report. Our readiness is we're ready to go. Our testing target is, you know, like 50, I don't even know per what, but we're only at 40. However, they are doing increased testing and targeted testing. They want people to, let's see, average. Oh, the average positive testing target is 2%. We're actually at 2.5. The case contact, when they're doing the contact tracing, the target is to get to everybody within 90% of the people within 24 hours. Our actual number is only 62%, and the problem is people don't answer their phones. You call them on their cell phone, they don't recognize the number, and they don't answer. So because of that, we're like 30% below where we need to be. New outbreaks, our target is 2, and an outbreak is defined by 2 people who have related cases. So if it's at a restaurant and 2 people that were at a restaurant happen to get sick, they have a team, an employer contact team to send out. Anyway, new outbreaks are limited to 2, and we're actually at 4. So we've got some work to do over the next few days if we're going to get to phase 3 right away. And then the R3 grants for the first round, they expect to send out notifications to the recipients this week. And the second round of grants is currently open and closes this Friday. So we will see what happens there. But I think this is just, this information is important because it's telling us how quickly we're going to get to phase 3. And whereas I was certainly hoping for the first of the week, it could be a little longer. So with that, Council Member Bond, reports?
No report.
Council Member Steckler?
Just 2 things. Very quickly, I'll be joining a couple of my fellow council members this week in the virtual AWC conference this week, which is going to be on our computers, so the Association of Washington Cities, which I'm sure will be very interesting. We've got a number of good conferences coming up every day for the rest of the week. I also wanted to echo something that somebody brought up at the beginning of this. I know it's kind of redundant because we've heard it so much and so many thanks for it, but I think it really signifies how important it was. I wanted to make sure that on the record, the right people were thanked for our graduation celebration parade. I mean, that was a remarkable event. And I don't know if the general public, I know some of the media is on this call, but all of the people that deserve to be thanked for that. And I don't know, you know, if people are really aware of all of the individuals that had to work to make this thing happen. And, you know, for example, the original idea of the parade, I've never seen it stated anywhere, so I'll state it, that came from our mayor. Pam Pruitt, when I remember I asked about a couple months ago, can we do anything for the kids that they're having a crappy senior year? And that was one of her ideas, which became a great reality. Our city manager went through a lot of red tape and many opportunities to shrink that parade route down and kept fighting it so that we could actually incorporate that long parade route throughout all of Mill Creek, not just the shortest, easiest parade route. It was a very difficult parade route. But because we did the longer parade route, we got to take a parade through our entire city limits, including the perimeters that don't always get a lot of activity. Having walked that, not walked it, but driven that perimeter, I was so happy. So yeah, I would be dead if I walked it. I was so happy to see all of the Mill Creek citizens that came out to cheer people on. That really was incredible. And this wasn't just parents and aunts and uncles. This was people that had no relations, but just wanted to make those kids feel good. To our police chief and the police, I know it wasn't easy for you, Chief Eastman. Thank you for, you know, making sure that our kids were safe. A lot of people don't realize that the limitations that we originally put on this, the only reason we did that was to protect the kids. And when this parade is over, no one got hurt, no one fell out, no one got run over, no one got damaged, no one got in an accident. You wouldn't think about that because it didn't happen, but that didn't happen because we took all the right precautions. To the marketing team, all the things that you did, including getting out there and setting them up, to our public works that set up those signs. I mean, little things like this, so that all of those side streets that ended onto the parade route got advance notice that from 10 to 11:30, there's going to be a parade. So if you want to get out of, you know, cul-de-sac or your street, just let you know in advance, day before, there's going to be a parade coming through. We didn't get any complaints of people saying, "Ah, dang it, there was a parade. I couldn't get out." This was a flawless execution. It included a lot of different people executing it, and I think that congratulation. We got to make sure that congratulation goes out to all of the people. It looked real easy, and it was not real easy because of all these people that did their job right. So, the one I'll leave with is the thanks to the citizens of Mill Creek, who came out and thanked the kids, even though they weren't their relations. There was a lot of social media buzz, and I'll quote one and only one that I saw that really made me feel good. One person, like many people, said, "Great parade, blah, blah, blah." And at the end of it, they ended their social media quote with, "I love my city," which I thought, you know, not too often you get something like that. So kudos to everybody. I also love my city, and I think all of our citizens love our city. And so it's kind of nice to, through all this crap that's been going on in 2020, it was nice to have something fun going on. So thanks to everybody. I'm done.
Thank you, John. Councilmember Cavallari, reports.
Thanks, Mayor. There has been a lot of rhetoric, I guess, and a lot of commentary throughout the country about defunding our police. And I've received emails, probably as many as you have, comments, even passerbys in the street. So I would just say here tonight that we as a city, public safety is always a top priority, that we do not plan on defunding. It's not happened. It's not a conversation we're willing to even engage in. We love our police here. We're not reducing our manpower. We're not reducing our presence on the street. And citizens should always know that public safety is job number one here at the city. Thanks, Mayor.
Okay, Stephanie? You're muted, Stephanie.
I was muted, sorry. Thank you, Mayor. I want to start by also pretty much just saying all the things that John already said, but, you know, I want to make sure I sent them an email, but I want to make sure that they are publicly recognized. You know, City Manager Scott Eastman, all the staff, everyone who worked so hard to make that parade possible, because it was a lot of work. And I don't think the city realizes how hard people work to make things like this become a reality. And it was such a heartwarming experience to participate in and just see the whole community come out there and just to be able to stand there and scream and cheer for those seniors and see the looks on their faces of pure joy and their families. It, you know, that was really just a wonderful moment, and to see everyone on Facebook talking about how great it was and posting their pictures and how excited they were. I think with everything going on right now, the city really, really needed that moment, and it was wonderful to have. I also, on top of that, I want to add, I don't know, like all of you, I don't know if anyone else is receiving emails about the preschool, but I received a couple emails regarding concern about preschool. And I think I would like for us to have an updated a discussion maybe on what's going on, because I wasn't really aware. So I would like for us to maybe, I thought maybe council should have an update on what's going on, so we are in the loop there. And also regarding the Equity Commission, I know we received a few emails, and the caller that called in, I'm not sure what that would entail for us as a city. If anybody wanted to look into that, just to let us know a little more definition on what that would actually look like for us, that I thought that might be helpful. So, and that's all I've got. And I'm participating in the AWC this week, so I'm sure there'll be more next week. So thanks.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem Holtzclaw reports.
No report tonight, Mayor.
Mike Todd.
Thank you. A bunch of items. I'll try to go through them quickly. Councilmember Jared Mead was the speaker at the Mill Creek Chamber of Commerce meeting last week. He introduced themselves and talked about the state of the county and really talked to them about, particularly about things that were programs the county is doing to support businesses. Small attendance, but they're doing those by Zoom. We had made a commitment as a council to make sure we had a city council member there. I'm there as a board member. I'm kind of wearing two hats, but we should make sure that's on our calendar so that we can have somebody come and somebody else come and represent the city, show that we're supporting that group. Second thing, AWC conference. I'm glad you two are going. It's already started. I already went to a couple of cool things today. Economic forecast was a great session. Spent some of that data to Jeff. Another session on leading optimistically was really good. One of the little tidbits out of that was 90% of communication is nonverbal communication. And that was an interesting thought. And then we had a networking session where people were asked, what is going on differently in your city now that you're having meetings remotely? How are you engaging with citizens? And several city council members from other places said they were going from 3 or 4 attendees at their face-to-face meetings to 25, 35, 45 people because of Zoom. And so on the contrast is we're getting more participation, or some people are getting more participation by having Zoom meetings because they don't have to travel or they can eat dinner while they're watching or whatever. But it is only that 90%, you're missing that 90% of the nonverbal communication. So it's an interesting contrast to think about that. Sessions all week. I'm sure that we will have an opportunity as attendees to review the sessions, like they told us, through the end of the year. The legitimacy and the logistics of how we make those favorite sessions that Stephanie and John and I like available to the rest of the council, there's got to be some reasonable way to do it. We're not cheating them out of the money because it's a free conference this year, but I think we'll all take notes and pass along the ones we think might be of interest to the council in general. Another meeting this morning was the SCIT, Snohomish County Committee on Improved Transportation. And just two things out of that, talking about the state hole they're facing, as Jeff mentioned, $4.5 billion this biennium, 4.4 next biennium. One of the things that's going on federally is that the House has passed what they call the HEROES Act. And if the Senate were to go ahead and do something the same way the HEROES Act is, it would mean like $10 billion coming to the state. So that kind of fix a big problem for the state. Nobody's really betting that that's going to happen, but that's the order of magnitude of things they're talking about Washington, D.C. And the second bit of news is Sound Transit, as of this week, is starting their process that they're calling realignment. They did this back during the recession 2008. Realignment means, we're not sure we're going to have enough revenue to do all the projects we promised in ST3. And so I'll kind of watch that. We'll probably hear about it in the news. I suspect there will be things that will upset us in Snohomish County, namely that they won't get to Everett when they promised to, or we'll never get there, or they will change the alignment, or all those things, which is understandable, but it's unfortunate. Sound Transit has committed, and they do believe they can get Linwood Link done in 2024. That project is in works, not delayed. They think they're going to get that done, but this is talking about stuff beyond that that we've all, the voters voted for and are getting taxed for. Fourth item, I've got a question for the city manager and staff, and we're thinking particularly since Tom Rogers may still be on the call. We had a question from one of our citizens who sent us all a letter about the property across from Jackson High School. It's a wetland with one house on it. It's kind of a tough situation. I was just curious how we were doing on circling back and helping that individual. His request was that we quit calling it a wetland, and I don't think we're allowed to do that. I think it's a wetland under state requirements, so I don't think it's in our power to do that, but I do understand his concerns. I was wondering, do we have any update on that from Tom or city manager?
Thank you,
Michael.
Thank you, Mayor and Councilman Todd. I did assign a follow-up to the planning or the food director Hortolosa to the planning. So Tom, do you have an update for Councilman Todd?
I do not. Not aware of the issue.
We'll follow up with you tomorrow, Councilman Todd.
Okay.
Yeah. I'd be happy to send a copy of my letter to staff if they need that. Is that appropriate?
Yes, please send it. I believe I received a copy through the city manager email and had forwarded it on at the time. So please send me what you received. I'll compare it against what I have. Thank you.
Yeah, at least what I received was a hard copy letter. We all had one in our box, but I'll scan that tonight and send it to both of you. Another item that I was surprised in reading the news of Mill Creek this past Saturday that the Seven Seas binding site plan has gone, I guess, to the hearing examiner, and he's gonna make a decision by the end of the month. But the article referred to it would go to the council next for some sort of process, and then the developer for this property is hoping to start turning dirt in August. I'm concerned that we have three meetings in July. I don't want us to be critical path. I'm curious what we need to do so that we are not the thing that delays this individual from getting shovels in the ground before we hit the wet season again. Any comments or update on that one?
Yeah, Tom?
Yes, the hearing examiner did listen, did hear the binding site plan for 7C. One condition that was placed on that development is to obtain an easement for site distance from the adjacent property, which is owned by the city. So because it's a property interest, the city council will have to make a decision on whether or not to grant the easement, and if we do, what the conditions are. Will we require compensation or not? How much compensation? We have drafted something that could go as soon as the 7th or certainly in July. There's three meetings in July, so we could probably get something to you. I'm not aware of it being actually scheduled yet.
As soon as we've got the agenda summary done, our goal is to get this moving along. I spoke with Daniel Carr from Seven Seas during the time that we were precluded under the governor's order from having a meeting on this. We scheduled that Zoom meeting as quickly as we could, and he's impressed me with how important it is for us to move with all due dispatch, and that's what we're working on, Councilman Todd.
Thank you. Well, I'm just one of seven. So go ahead.
I was just going to ask to make sure with whatever is brought to us, we're going to need to understand what that site distance easement does or does not do with regard to our development, potential development of our property. That's going to be a key issue for my consideration.
Yeah, so I'm just one of seven, but I would offer Mr. Rogers and Mr. Caravino, even if we don't have the full easement ready to sign off through an ordinance or whatever it takes, I'd be interested in just some information, a map that shows what we're talking about, how many feet, how big the hunk of land is, how we might value that, and as Councilor Mayor Pro Tem Holzclaw points out, what kind of restrictions? Does this mean we can't do anything, or do we have an obligation to maintain it, or those kinds of things? So just some general background so we can mull on it for a week would be great. I just don't want us to get to the end of July and go, we ran out of time. That's not fair for the developer.
Okay, Brian?
Tom, does our code provide an appeal from the hearing examiner's decision to the council on the binding site plan?
Yes, it does.
That, to me, throws another big wrench in this. I don't know how we can consider an easement until after an appeal period has passed and we know whether or not there's an appeal. There's an appeal filed and we're negotiating an easement with this. That seems to me like that puts us in an awfully awkward position.
I would probably defer to the city attorney, but I think you could probably put some provision in the easement that's requires something to happen or it's null and void or something. But you could probably grant. I don't know if you have any comment on that or if you're still on the phone.
I don't know if you're going to answer that tonight. I would just ask that you guys consult with Grant on that issue after tonight's.
And I dismissed Grant earlier so we could save on fees. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so Mike, we will get that scheduled as soon as possible.
Yes, Mayor.
Thank you. And I got one last item, as I think, you know, I was poking at it a little while ago, and I think it's important that we as a team, council manager team, we had a great retreat right before this all happened. And we were starting to work on goals and objectives and things like that. Our city manager is due or overdue on a review. And that review is not a bad thing. That review is an opportunity to sit down and talk about what's going well, what we want to change, what are the goals for next year. And I would like to make sure we schedule that for July. I've heard from the mayor that we're working on that, but again, there's only three meetings coming up in July. I think it's probably going to take a couple bites at the apple for us to understand what the process is going to be. So we agree on the process. have a chance to collect some information, talk about it, maybe recap on that. I don't want to do this halfway and then have us all disappear in August and have our city manager puzzled, or any of us puzzled about what we agreed to. So I would encourage us to get that started in the first meeting of July, if at all possible, even if it's just to talk about the process steps, and what we expect to do. But we need to get that done. Thanks.
Absolutely. That's the plan. Okay, Michael, do you have any reports?
Briefly, Mayor. We just recently received from WCIA a risk management toolkit that we are just beginning to unpack to understand the risk dynamics in the COVID-19 era. And so that's something that our entire team is going to be working through as we formulate our plans for the phased-in opening. With regard to phased-in opening, we're pleased to report that the playground and other equipment are currently available for our citizens. Park signage has already been printed, manufactured, and was installed today. We're also going to be opening up the bathrooms. And the core of the message is that everyone that utilizes the park is going to need to assume the risk and the responsibility for a disinfection, either before handling the high-touch equipment or after, but that our parks are going to be open. And there's advice relating to social distancing consistent with the governor and Department of Health's direction. The other relates to COVID-19. It's something that I've heard since beginning as a city manager, as the complaints as it relates to the website, the search engine, and a number of other limitations. And while we're clearly sensitive to technology never providing answers as it relates to human dynamics and human behavior in using the system, what we are looking at is a potential for CARES Act funding to enable us to have a more effective website for emergencies and for communications and emergencies. We will be bringing you more information on that as it develops, but it's something that the team is working on. And it's really capturing what has been missing. And we've received a lot of constructive criticism, and we thank the council for their feedback. And we also know that there are some technical limitations that we want to work through. And so we're going to be able to report back to council at a later date relating to that. That concludes my my report. Thank you.
Okay, so we're up to audience communication. Does anybody want to talk? Oh, Stephanie, what?
I just wanted to report to the city manager that right before we got on our meeting tonight, actually, my group mom came through that the playground had the sign up and that the playgrounds were open. So that, just so you know, that the signs did go up, at least on our playground today. So thank you.
Okay, and now we're up to audience communication. Does anybody want to talk to the council before we adjourn?
Yes.
Okay, name, address, and 3 minutes.
Barb Heidel, 1401 144th Place, Southeast, Mill Creek. I know I'm not supposed to ask a question, but I still have one. Is City Hall opening up after July 1st, or are we waiting for phase 3 to open up, start opening up City Hall? Thank you.
Michael?
Yes, Mary. We are working to begin July 1st, according to the governor's phase-in plan. We have also ordered, thank you for the question, we've also purchased sufficient masks, 5 masks for each staffer, and we're working on protocols for appropriate density for those that can close doors to, whenever we're in public or working together in proximity, that we're all going to be required to wear our masks. There will be exceptions. We're formulating planning consistent with CIA guidelines, but we are looking to do this in a manner that's well-directed and reasoned out, consistent with the guidelines that we have received. We've purchased a tremendous amount of equipment. We've also done HVAC upgrades. We have installed ionizers before the filtration systems and our HVAC systems so that we are able to provide the best quality air that is possible. We're also working, as our finance director, Mr. Ballantyne, mentioned earlier, to begin a phase-in opening for our passport offices, where we would be limited presently to two counters. We are working to provide a triage, not the term, but a pre-screening that is located in our parking lot, so that we can ensure that those that are coming up to have their documents processed at the passport office have all their paperwork in order before we place them into the queue to bring them in one at a time. We're moving slowly. We're also doing this while continuing to watch the latest data that I believe we all are regarding spikes throughout the country in these areas where there's a belief that has been opened up too soon. We're really trying to strike a practical balance between the concerns for this epidemic and the very strong reality that we need to throttle forward to get on with the business of running the city of Mill Creek. And so we're doing it with the utmost care so that if there are criticisms or even lawsuits that arise out of this, that we are well defended and that we will be able to supply the facts that show that we exercised the standard of care that's required in this pandemic era.
Okay, thank you. Does anybody else want to talk to the council tonight? Going once, name, address, and 3 minutes.
John Raymer, 831 148th Street, Southeast, Mill Creek. I was hoping the council would address the elephant in the room, but it hasn't, so I'd like to get that comment on the record. I'm appalled at how the city is handling the current financial crisis. 2 weeks ago, the council was informed that there's a significant budget shortfall and that actions needed to be taken. Three council members expressed reservations about making cuts in such a short notice, yet mere hours after the meeting, four members of the staff were let go by email while they slept. So how much money might be saved by letting four members of our family go? I suspect that it's far less than the $700,000 over budget that the city is on legal review fees that was briefly mentioned in the meeting before last. I'm just curious, how do you get to be 200% over budget and the council not be aware of that? I personally would like to see a breakout of what makes up that $700,000 over expenditure, line by line, presented in a near future council meeting. And I'd like to see what the council wants done to make sure they're not surprised again by such a dramatic deviation from expected spending. That's, of course, assuming that these actions and budget trends is a surprise. In addition to the four terminated positions, the city also canceled several service contracts. Councilman Todd, you stated you do not want budget cuts to change the feel of what Mill Creek is like. I've heard through the rumor mill, and Councilman Vignal just mentioned it, that the contract for the preschool program is one of those. That sort of cut changes what community of Mill Creek is like. I believe that program actually makes money for the city. So I'm kind of curious. I'm glad Councilman Vignal asked about that. Thank you for doing that. But I'm curious, has that program actually been cut? And if so, why? I'd like to hear that at some future meeting. Lastly, it was stated in the last council meeting that Mill Creek is under a hiring freeze due to budget cuts. Four permanent staff members have been let go, yet two temporary positions were not. The interim city clerk came to work within days of the previous clerk giving notice. The interim chief of staff reported to work within days of the council approving the non-par slot. Both of those individuals were directly appointed by the city manager and were acquaintances of his before he came here. The city manager stated that he's concerned about entanglements and appearances and red flags in city contracts. Yet the direct appointment of personal acquaintances to high-paying positions doesn't seem to raise those same concerns. There are federal and state laws about hiring and filling government positions, even municipal ones. Those procedures have not been followed with these two slots. I do want to note that procedures were followed to fill the new executive assistant position that the council approved. So the proper way to hire is known. Now, according to Washington state law, the city manager may indeed appoint someone to a position on a temporary basis, perfectly legal and acceptable, but for a time period of 6 months only. The interim clerk has been here for more than 6 months. The interim chief of staff is coming up on 6 months, yet no action has been taken to hire permanent staff despite knowing how to do so. Apparently, those two temporary fills were not considered for temporary reduction. what bothers me more, that neither of those individuals are filling positions, filling those two positions, even live in the state of Washington. The optics on this look absolutely horrible. I sincerely hope that the council is asking the questions that any reasonable person would ask and have answers that would satisfy a state-level inquiry and members of our community, should they be asked, because inevitably they will be. I also hope the council will ask for better oversight and tracking on financial expenditures in the future. Now, if you already have those systems in place, then absolutely wonderful. I'm happy for that. And I simply ask that you consider letting the public see that information or make it more obvious where that information can be found, because I live here, my taxes come here, and I intend to keep doing that for a long time to come. And I would love to see and make sure that my contributions to the community are being well guarded. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, John. Does anybody else want to talk to the council tonight?
I do. Yes.
Name, address, and 3 minutes. Yeah, I can hear you.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Kim Mason Hatt. I do not live in the city. I am the AFSCME president of the local union that represents the administrative and maintenance workers there at the city and long-term employee. Thank you for listening. Last meeting, the city manager spoke of layoffs in general terms, but the very next day, 4 layoff notices went out. At that same meeting, 4 of 6 council members present all talked about not wanting to lay off people yet and to wait and to discuss it. But still, at 1:41 in the morning, I received a layoff notice along with 3 of my coworkers. 4 layoff notices went out as if the decision had been already made, regardless of what the council's will or comments were. So despite the overwhelming message that you gave to the city manager, he chose to disregard that and still sent notices out anyway. It was a done deed well before you met at that last meeting. That is clear. So here I am again, disappointed that the union was not involved earlier in this process in an effort to avoid layoffs and all the negative things that go with this. An open line of communication can go a long way to achieve the same goals. Keeping the city running at its peak performance. It is also disappointing that the administration sees staff as just an expense. Staff at this city work very hard, and the city does get something in return. We strive to provide excellent and top-notch customer service to all of our customers, whether they are residents, co-workers, or anybody that comes in to see us or call us. The service provided by staff is not just an expense. And staff cannot be measured by a dollar sign, only by a dollar sign. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else tonight? Going once, twice? Okay, seeing so nobody else, then we will go ahead with the will of the council. We will be adjourned. Thank you very much, everybody, for attending. Yeah, Vincent, we're adjourned. Thank you.